Sandra na Chris Gandhi.
Thank you, Blessing and Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, June 12th, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Chris Gande.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The Constitutional Court rules that criminal defamation is unconstitutional as it violates freedom of expression and should therefore be scrapped.
Having a case hanging over your head for 3 years is a bit tricky, and it's quite thrilling and exciting that the law should be struck off as it is deemed unconstitutional. So I'm over the moon. I'm excited.
An MDCT activist is arrested for allegedly attempting to set the opposition party's Harvest House headquarters on fire last month.
And the wait is almost over. The World Cup is here, but several hundred Brazilians protested across the country today, charging the government spent billions on the games at the expense of the poor.
How many Zimbabweans, the people who all walks of life, they want the African teams to do so well this time around. Some of them are talking of Ghana because of what they did in South Africa 2010. Some are saying this time, because of the experience, Cote d'Ivoire might rise to the occasion.
The Constitutional Court of Zimbabwe today declared the charge of criminal defamation unconstitutional and argued that it should be scrapped. The court made the determination in a matter brought by two then-standard newspaper journalists, Nebanji Madanire and Nkaba Mchazi, after they were arrested and charged with criminal defamation following a story they ran alleging that Munyaradzi Kereke's Green Card Medical Aid Society was facing financial hardships. In its ruling, the court said Mchazi and Madanire had, quote, succeeded in demonstrating that the offense of criminal defamation is not reasonably justifiable in a democratic society and was out of line with the former constitution. The full bench consented and ordered Justice Minister Emmerson Mnangagwa to show cause why the Criminal Law Codification and Reform Act section should not be scrapped if he does not agree with the ruling. Studio 7's Ntungamili Nkomo reached Machazi, currently studying in England, who says he's happy about the court ruling.
Having a case hanging over your head for 3 years is a bit tricky, and it's quite thrilling and exciting that the law should be struck off as it is deemed unconstitutional. So I'm over the moon. I'm excited.
What does this mean for press freedom in Zimbabwe?
Well, the judgment is not quite final because the Minister of Justice has been called upon, if he has any issues, to come to the court and say if he has any issues to having the law struck down. But just in case it doesn't, and if the judgment is upheld, it will mean a very lot to journalists. For the past 5-10 years, several journalists have been arrested for criminal defamation. I can count 10 probably at the top of my head. And criminal defamation, by its nature, meant that the burden of proof is on the accused rather than on the state. So chances of you being found guilty are much higher, because you have to prove you're not guilty rather than prove your innocence. So it's coming at a good time, because in the past we've seen people being arrested on the flimsiest of charges, and also there's been a tendency by probably some of us in the media to censor ourselves because we don't know whose toes we're stepping on. And the use of criminal defamation is a bit of a catch-all law. So probably exciting times. It's not the end of it all. The fight for freedom of expression should continue, but this is a beginning to say at least this thing has been removed out of our way, this law, this kind of legislation, and to somewhat it frees the journalist fraternity.
That was former Standard newspaper journalist Nkaba Machazi in England, speaking on the line with Ntungamili Nkomo.
A delegation from Zimbabwe is among more than 140 countries attending a convention in New York to address the rights of persons with disabilities. The convention, which ends today, aims to address how best to implement the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities beyond 2015. P. people with disabilities continue to be discriminated against in schools, the workplace, and even at home. An estimated 10% of the world's population, or 650 million people, live with a disability, according to the UN, with the majority 80% in developing countries. Rejoice Dimire is the executive director of the Disabled Women Support Organization in Harare. As a person with disabilities and in a wheelchair, she says she has confronted problems and hopes the convention can end discrimination.
I was involved in a car accident and I sustained a spinal injury, so I'm paralyzed, so I'm a wheelchair user.
Do you personally feel discrimination against you?
Yes, I did experience really a lot of discrimination and being looked down upon. And I can say even the dignity which I had when I was able-bodied as a mother, as a wife, as an auntie, I lost some of those things. I only regained a little when I was employed as an executive director. Then some people had to see, the family members had to see, oh, she can do something. But at the beginning, they were looking down upon me. They thought I was just a burden. You would not even be allowed to visit the places which you want, to socialize with other people, as though you are a prisoner. As a mother, you couldn't even ask your kids to say, oh, can you do this for me? Can you do this for me? I had to really show them that I was able to do it.
Now, conventions like the one that is taking place in New York, how do you think they can help change perception of the fact that people with disabilities, outside their disabilities, are really very capable human beings?
It will really help us if our nation be educated on issues of disability and seeing people with disability from other countries that they are really people who can make it in society. That disability is an inability. That information, if it is disseminated nationwide, even to our parliament members, for those in the community leaders, this will really help a lot because they will understand the disability better than what they know now.
What are the challenges that you encounter as an organization dealing with people with disabilities?
Most of our members, they are not educated. The fact that the infrastructure in schools is not disability friendly. There are no ramps, no toilets for disabilities. There are no special teachers. As women cannot access information or read for themselves, for those who can read. If they are not really educated to read Braille, they can't. Most of the information is not written in Braille. And for those with hearing impairment, there is no sign language. In most activities which are happening in the country, you find that the sign language is not there.
Rejoice Timire is the executive director of the Disabled Women Support Organization. She spoke with us from Harare.
An MDCT activist was arrested today for allegedly attempting to set the opposition party's headquarters on fire sometime last year. Thomas Chiripasi has more details from the capital.
Police officers in Harare today arrested MDCT activist Leonard Dendera. Police spokesperson Charity Charamba said Dendera was taken in for questioning following allegations by the opposition party's security department that he attempted to firebomb the MDC headquarters last month. Dendera was the first to make a police report claiming that he was assaulted by party spokesperson Douglas Monzora, but the police in Mashingo said he was in the ancient town when Dendera was reportedly assaulted during the night at Harvest House. This resulted in the police calling in some members of the party security department who alleged that Dendera, who is backing calls for party leader Morgan Tsvangirai to resign, was about to set their headquarters ablaze when they chased him, only for Dendera to rush to the police, claiming that he had been assaulted by Monzora. Charamba said investigations into the matter are still ongoing and could not shed light as to when Dendera would appear in court. Tensions in the MDCT have been rising after some of Mr. Tsvangirai's lieutenants called for leadership renewal, but those backing the opposition leader say he may only be removed at a congress. Meanwhile, the MDCT's youth wing today renewed its calls for mass protests, saying they will embark on demonstrations soon. The wing Acting Secretary for Information, Clifford Tlachwayo, said the ZANU-PF government has failed to deliver on its election promises.
People are already mobilized by the fact that they are failing to get a dollar. They are failing to get employment after graduating 10 years ago. So it's not about MDC or any other thing. It's about an individual being pushed by the economic situation. So we are going to lead in those mass protests demanding our constitutional rights.
Tlachwayo said his party is worried that the majority of Zimbabweans are out of work.
Majority of the youth find themselves jobless, while thousands are forced out of employment due to increased carbon closures. In such a crisis, the youth are the main victims.
He added that his party is also concerned by the government's failure to provide free basic education in line with the new constitution.
Over 1 million children have failed to go back to school because government failed to secure funding for basic education assistance module, BEAM. Secondly, the conditions of service for teachers and lecturers. Thirdly, the so-called government has failed to promote higher and tertiary education. The policies remain retrogressive and do not inspire confidence into the economy, thereby negatively affecting social services such as the education sector.
Studio 7 failed to get a comment from Primary and Secondary Education Minister Lazarus Dokora. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington. If you are in South Africa, listen to Studio 7 through the following number, 010-591-6465.
If you are in America or Canada, you can tune in to our phone number, 712-432-5882. Once again, 712-432-5882.
If you are in Britain, call 033-0010-334. Once again, 033-0010-334.
Civil servants are skeptical about the government's ability to pay them timely following the publication of a new schedule showing when various government employees will receive their monthly salaries. Under the new schedule, officers of the Zimbabwe National Army will, like in the past, be paid first, this time in the first 2 weeks of the month, followed by teachers and the rest of the civil servants and pensioners at the end of each month. The new pay scheme is meant to address the government's delays in paying civil servants. Sifiso Ndlovu of the Zimbabwe Teachers Association says they are not sure whether this pay scheme will work.
Uncertainty was causing a lot of anxiety, and as a result, it is now affecting the planning and management of unions. At the same time, the families were now finding it very difficult to focus on their income as well. So by coming with dates that are definite and shifting the dates, it is an acknowledgement that the resources in the country, which are currently squeezed by the cash flow, indicate a government is now appreciating the need to adjust each date in order to follow the revenue pattern that has been established. It has always coming and they will eventually pick up a pattern of income. What is pleasing us is that there is now a definite promise. However, we still want to see whether they will hold true to that promise or they will prevaricate again in future.
That was Sifiso Ndlovu of the Zimbabwe Teachers Association speaking with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Bulawayo.
Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe Secretary General Raymond Majongwe tells reporter Jonga Kandemiri the government is setting a bad precedent by failing to stick to the normal pay days.
It is disappointing, disheartening, it is unfortunate, and we want to believe it sets a very dangerous precedent for the future of labor in this country. It is clearly an unfair labor practice for government to willy-nilly act in this particular fashion. We also need to make it very clear that it will be for the first time that government is saying to the country, at a time when we are celebrating Zimbabwe asset and its potential, to say there are workers in this country that will only earn their salaries after Christmas. It sets a dangerous precedent, and I think it is punishing workers unnecessarily.
What would you have suggested had you been given the opportunity to sit down and discuss with the government?
It is very clear that government has a selected group of employees, and these are the armed soldiers and police, whom they have always paid first, and money has never run out for them. While we agree that possibly they could be doing many other things in protecting government, but we must make it very clear that we are also selflessly serving this government, and we are all abiding by the laws of this land. And it must not come out clear that government is favoring one son ahead of its own daughters and other sons who are also workers and diligently and selflessly serving government.
Are you going to challenge this?
Obviously, yes. And the pity is that we are actually working on a letter of protest, and we want to encourage Apex Council and many others who might think likewise. This is the time for us to speak with one voice.
And that was Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe Secretary General Raymond Majongwe.
The Constitutional Assembly Party is also weighing in on the issue, saying failure by the government to adhere to normal pay days is a violation of workers' rights.
We have got strong reservations with the meeting made yesterday, changing days each month for the pay days of civil servants. We believe that there must just be a single day every month, which should not change. This, in our own view, will bring certainty to the civil servants involved. They also need to plan on their salaries, they've got bills to pay, and they also need to be certain in terms of when they will really get their money in their account. So we believe that the changing of this is a way by Zanzibar to try and further violate the rights of these workers, because we're not even sure and guarantee whether they will be able to pay these civil servants on those days that they've gazetted.
Are you going to challenge this schedule?
Of course, we have indicated in our statement that as MCA are going to go to court to take the MPF government to court. We would want the court to establish whether what they are doing is legal. To us, it's something that is very illegal and something that is not respecting the rights of workers. So we believe that we must go to court, and when we go to court, what we seek to get is a proclamation that must proclaim a single day of each month as the paid day, instead of giving various days up to December, as announced yesterday.
When do you expect to go to court?
Our lawyers are already working on the issue. So I think with each development, we will notify the nation, but we are already working on the court papers to ensure that we take government to court over the matter.
That was National Constitutional Assembly spokesman Madok Chibasa on the line from Harare.
Political commentator Roderick Fayayo says the government is changing pay dates due to lack of funds.
There is no one who is prepared, especially after the fraudulent 21 July election, there is no one who is prepared to invest in the country. So what is basically happening now is that the investors are not coming in. Ordinary Zimbabweans who have their money, have taken their money out of the banks because they feel that their money might be taken and used and abused any time.
Do you see this economic problem coming to an end and civil servants getting their money in a proper way?
We first need to deal with our politics first before our economy comes into place. As long as we continue to be led by people who have no regard for the rule of law, people who are fond of just checking without working, people who are fond of just inverting without any plan, we will not go anywhere.
And that was political commentator Roderick Fayayo of the Bulawayo Progressive Residents Association. We were unable to speak with Minister Patrick Chinamasa, who's responsible for the finance portfolio, as calls to his mobile phone went unanswered.
Former Lands and Rural Resettlement Minister Dr. Herbert Murerwa was today appointed as the new ZESA Holdings Chairman. He will be deputized by the Power Utilities former Chief Executive Officer, Engineer Benjamin Rafemoyo. Energy Minister Dzikamai Mavaire also announced board members to other ZESA subsidiaries, including the Zimbabwe Company, the Kariba Hydro Power Company, Zimbabwe Electricity Distribution and Transmission Company. Zesa Enterprises, Powertel, Noic, Petrotrade, Zimbabwe Energy Regulatory Authority, and the Rural Electrification Agency. Livid Zimbabweans are now wondering whether these new appointments will help address problems bedeviling the power utility as load shedding continues. Zimbabwe needs 2,200 megawatts of power daily, but generates only half of its needs, forcing the country to rely on imports from neighboring Mozambique and the Democratic Republic of Congo. And without sufficient infrastructure and energy investment, experts say Zimbabwe's economy will continue to lag and fail to attract foreign investment. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke with economist Washington Mehlo Makulu with the Resource Exploitation Watch and former Energy and Power Development Minister Elton Mangoma. Mangoma says Zimbabwe's economy will continue to go down the abyss if energy issues are not addressed.
You can see that with the shortage of electricity and the actions that were taken soon after the demise of the inclusive government, this shortage is to be expected, because the things that we had planned to ease this shortage, and to a large extent, most of those things have been undone by the new minister and the new regime, clearly on the basis of one, not understanding what needs to be done, and two, partisan politics that defies logic. So this predicament we are in now is not surprising.
Mr. Mehlo Makulu, what's your reaction that Zimbabweans will have to face load shedding during this winter season?
No, this is a matter of concern, I think, to Zimbabweans, whether you are a commercial or you are a residential customer. In fact, as I speak to you now, I'm speaking from a dark office on the eastern part of Harare, and that is affecting business. And I can imagine, especially those that are in manufacturing, in mining and in agriculture, who rely on electricity to be able to power their machines and be able to produce. If you can imagine working in a professional office environment, that we are actually impacted. And that also affects residential consumers in terms of their domestic requirements. But I think what is of concern really going forward is that given the economic situation that is obtaining, we need to make sure that all the enablers of the economy, such as power, are working to make sure that we are able to keep this economy going.
Mr. Mangoma, as Mr. Mehlo Makulu is pointing out, there need to be economic enablers that will assist Zimbabwe in this issue. What are some things that can or should be done?
Actually, it's putting a lot of those things that have been in place. One was to deal with the feed-in tariff, particularly of solar, which was worked on and done. We have put in policies for independent power producers. And what we have seen is that the negation of the policy of independent power producers, because these are independent, and therefore the chances for corruption are reduced. And ZANU-PF does not want that to happen. So they want to continue to have some way they use patronage. And as a result, they then get the things that are there and continue to want to give tenders based it on ZESA to pay for the increased capacity. But we know ZESA does not have that money, and therefore these will not be done.
Mr. Mehlo Makulu, I'll end it here with you. I'm not forgetting the ordinary Zimbabwean who is directly affected on this issue, but also, as you pointed out, industry is a major factor in this issue of electricity. What can be done in the nearest future?
Definitely, I do concede that we need to focus in terms of encouraging investment from the private sector through independent power producers, given that the limited fiscal space that obtains in Zimbabwe. And also, if you look at ZESA's financing, ZESA is settled with a multi-million dollar debt on their book, with their failing to service, and therefore ZESA does not have the capacity to invest in terms of new power stations. So the only solution lies with independent power producers. So that is where we need to really look at.
That was former Energy and Power Development Minister Elton Mangoma. You also heard from economist with the Resource Exploitation Watch, Washington Mehlo Makulu. Put your flags up in the sky. We'll be right back.
Thank you. That's the World Cup official theme for those who are anxiously waiting for the match coming up in the next few hours. I'm anxiously waiting. I can't wait to go home to watch from my couch. Anyway, before we go, several hundred Brazilian protesters are demonstrating across the country just hours before the World Cup begins. VOA's Nico Pino reports hundreds of people gathered in downtown Rio de Janeiro to protest the social policies and the billions of dollars Brazil spent on football stadiums. The demonstrators say they feel officials are neglecting the social services of Brazil and plan to protest throughout the World Cup. In Sao Paulo, dozens of protesters clashed with police near the Arena Corinthians Stadium, which will host the opening match. The run-up to the competition has been plagued by years of construction delays and budget overruns. The government spent $11.5 billion to prepare for the month-long event, including building for upgrading stadiums in 12 cities, hosting games among the 32-team field. Nico Pino tells us more.
Hi, everybody. It's Nico Pino, live from Sao Paulo in Brazil. So today is the opening game, but right now I'm in the street in Sao Paulo. There is a huge demonstration from union, from the homeless, and some students because they don't want to see the cup beginning. And right now you see some fights between some extremists like Black Blocs and the police. So even the journalists, we received tear gas, and everybody is trying to run out of this mess. But we have to say that you don't have a lot of protesters. I would say max 2,000 or 3,000, and the police outnumbers the protests. But it's not like what happened a year ago. So everything is under control. I guess Brazil didn't want to see that for the opening of the game.
So, Nico, do you see these protests affecting the big match between Brazil and Croatia tonight in any way?
The protests right now, they're like 10 kilometers from the stadium. And that was the plan for the Brazilian police, to keep them far, far away from the stadium. So tonight you're going to have the party at Itaquera Stadium, the Corinthians Arena, and you won't see protests there. But you have to understand that among a part of Brazilian population, you still have students, union workers, and activists. They don't want to see this cut because the issue remains that the Brazilian government has not invested enough in education, health, and it put billions of dollars to build some stadiums. So I think it's an ongoing movement, and it's going to end by the presidential election in October in Brazil.
And as a journalist yourself, and you're caught up in this protest, what is the mood like around where you are at?
We are not in the neighborhood very close to the stadium. So that's why right now the mood of the supporters, the fans around the stadium, are not really affected.
That was VOA sports analyst Nico Pino speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganya Huye from Sao Paulo in Brazil.
Meanwhile, Zimbabweans join the rest of the world in waiting for the first whistle allowing the World Cup tournament to begin. Local pubs are the venue of choice for many who fear load shedding may affect their joy. Marvelous Mhlanganya Huye speaks with sports analyst Ezra Chisasmanda.
Everyone is saying Brazil is going to be a walkover, but some of us know that Croatia is a strong side. But some veterans I was talking to, they are saying there is a danger that if Brazil get beaten tonight, there will be so much riots and the demonstrations that it will destabilize the tournament. So everyone is crossing their fingers that Brazil does well tonight.
When you look at the five African teams that are representing Africa at the World Cup, which teams are most Zimbabweans pitting to go forward and maybe get to the finals or maybe take the World Cup?
How many Zimbabweans want the African teams to do so well? Some of them are talking of Ghana because of what they did in South Africa 2010. Some are saying Cote d'Ivoire might rise to the occasion. And some people believe that Cameroon, with the Eto'o on fire, they might do well.
That was sports analyst Ezra Chisasmanda speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganya Huye from Bulawayo. It's your world, my world, our world today. And we invite the whole world to play. It's your world, my world, our world today. And we invite the whole world to play. En mi mundo, tu mundo, el mundo. De nosotros, invitamos a todo el mundo a jugar con nosotros.
Now here's a quick recap of today's top stories.
An MDCT activist is arrested for allegedly attempting to set the opposition party service house headquarters on fire last month.
Civil servants are skeptical about the government's ability to pay them timely following the publication of a new monthly schedule.
And the wait is almost over the World